it may please the court. My name is Michael Balanzio. I'm representing Timothy Cofer in this matter. Officer Cofer was a police officer on the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department on September 12, 2003. At that point in time, he was a father of four. He had three letters of commendation in his police file and no demerits against him, no black marks on his record. On September 12, 2003, he pulled over a drunk driver, and there was a scuffle that ensued between them. I'd like to save that portion of the actual scuffle and everything that came with it for Mr. O'Connor to discuss. And at this point, I'd like to turn to the procedural aspect of the case, in that Officer Cofer, 9 months after this scuffle, was terminated from his employment. He filed for a hearing before the board. And the Board of Police proffered this suggestion. Hey, we have this policy that allows you to go before a hearing officer. And on the list of hearing officers are several names of senior judges from Jackson County. And one of those is the Honorable John Moran. And John Moran, Officer Cofer selected John Moran, who wound up being the hearing officer in this case.
So your client waived his statutory right to a hearing in front of the full board?
Yes. If it is legally feasible to waive that statutory right, yes, he did. And that's another portion of this matter does the board have the capability to offer a waiver to a police officer?
Does he still have a case where if he waives the hearing, can it be submitted on the record, or could be? Is there still a case that goes forward if he appeals and he says, "I don't want a hearing, but I want you to review the record"? Does he have to have a record? Does he have to have a hearing in order for the case to still go forward to the board?
Yes. I believe under the terms of the statute itself that a hearing is required. Now, in this circumstance, we chose a hearing for the Honorable John Moran, who heard all the facts, determined the credibility of the witnesses, and said that this officer should not be terminated. And then the whole arbitrary and capriciousness comes in that the board wants to keep some form of de novo review. They want to keep the power of it, but not the responsibility of it. So they don't give us any opportunity to come before the board and have additional say before the board.
But you had an opportunity. You waived it. You decided to have a hearing in front of a hearing officer and have it before the board. If you wanted to have a hearing in front of the board, you could have had one, couldn't you?
Yes, we could have had a full hearing before the board from the get-go. But instead, the board offered an option of waiver before a hearing officer.
They have the authority to do that. In the St. Louis board, there was a statute that after some litigation, statute said they could do that.
Right.
But there wasn't a similar statute in Kansas City, was there?
No, there was not a similar statute.
So where's the authority if the St. Louis board required a statute for them to have an authority, the authority to have a hearing officer, and Kansas City does not? Where do you get the right to do it?
There would be no ability to do it. There would be no right to do it. And the cases discuss this in terms of subject matter jurisdiction. It is, if there's no subject matter jurisdiction to allow the board to act outside the scope of its authority.
Why would it affect the board's subject matter jurisdiction, whether or not a hearing was held? Why isn't a hearing a procedural requirement? And it may be required by the statute, but subject matter jurisdiction is a matter of authority, and the board has authority to hear these kinds of cases and to determine them. So it has subject matter jurisdiction of the type of case and controversy there. Had personal jurisdiction of the officer. It's really just a matter of whether the procedural requirements were followed or not, and if not, whether they were waivable or not, isn't it?
No. In reviewing the cases on subject on ultra vires, especially the ones that are municipal cases in municipalities that are contracts that were beyond the municipalities' powers, they said it's not voidable. They're void. They're void contracts. And as a contract setting, it's not quite the same as here, but there's nothing that's entirely on point other than the St. Louis case is the closest thing on point, and they subsequently went back and changed the statute.
So you're saying whatever title you give to it, whether it's subject matter jurisdiction or ultra vires or otherwise, it's void if you don't follow those requirements, so it can't be given any effect.
That's our argument to that, yes.
Are you let's say we were to say that the board doesn't have the authority to delegate. What's our remedy? Is it to assume that you know the law and you should have known that the board doesn't have the authority to delegate, so you shouldn't have waived your hearing in front of the board, or do we give effect to your waiver in front of the board, and so we say, if we say the hearing officer couldn't have heard it, and you waive your hearing in front of the board, you're out. What's your authority to say? Do you have any case law that would give us authority to say, you now should be able to have a hearing in front of the board when you waived it previously?
The Rogers case intimates that, which John and I litigated for quite a while. Rogers versus the Kansas City, Missouri. The board of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, and that they said the board cannot force a waiver.
We're not forcing a waiver.
I understand. There's nothing directly on point. And then the St. Louis case also intimates that the board cannot, on the waiver in that circumstance, the board required additional hearing. And I'm going to switch to Mr. O'Connor now.
Your Honors, let me give you the genesis of all this. The Rogers case, which I had for 5 years, we went over to have a board hearing that was set for trial for nine months. We had a special setting for a two-day trial. Witnesses subpoenaed.
Two-day hearing.
Two-day hearing. Witnesses subpoenaed, depositions taken. I'm waiting out in the hall while the board's eating barbecue during their session before we come in. I come in and start putting my stuff down for a trial. They say, no, you're not getting a trial. We signed a resolution. You're going to go try your case to Albert Reeder, who was their lawyer at the time. I said, no, I got a statute here that says I get a quorum of the board. They say, no, we're leaving. So I appeal that to the circuit court. Judge Shen says, the statute's clear. Give the guy a hearing. They appeal that to the Court of Appeals. Judge Hanna writes an opinion. Give the guy a hearing. Now we're 4 years later. Oh, they gave the guy the hearing all right. And then they found against him after spending 5 years and putting this guy through 5 years. However, Judge O'Malley then overturned that decision because Zobrist wrote a dissenting opinion because the evidence that they presented was not credible, in my opinion, nor his. And Judge O'Malley gave it all back, and then we settled it 5 years later. From that came the idea that lawyers, you can have a circuit judge or you can have us. And so if they're going to say the circuit judge gets to make the decision, then he becomes the board. I agree that maybe we waived. I'm not trying to get my cake, have my cake and eat it too, but they are. We waived the hearing. Yes, sir.
When you agreed to have a hearing officer do the case, and it was his then in a form of a recommendation to the board, and then the board could adopt that or overrule it, or how did they proceed that, or would they just simply adopt whatever the hearing officer said?
They call it a recommendation, but they've already gone beyond the statute because they can't even do what they're doing now by allowing us to do the waiver. But given the fact that they allowed it to waiver.
But let's give them their due.
Okay.
Let's assume that they could save their own time.
Okay.
By having somebody assigned to make a recommended set of findings of fact and conclusions of law. Then what happens?
All right. Then his findings, which were in our favor, contrary to the blurb that was put out that was outside that Judge Moran found against us, he found for us. Yeah. And then they took his decision and just wrote their own order. And my argument to you is this case.
They wrote their own order.
Terminating.
Pardon?
Terminating.
Yeah.
Directly against.
Was there a record that they could look at?
Their record was the transcript of the court.
Mr. O'Connor, isn't that similar to other administrative processes such as the Administrative Hearing Commission, that they have a hearing officer that hears the witnesses and that makes a recommendation, and then the Administrative Hearing Commission then is the actual finder of facts? So what's so outrageous about the board making the actual determination of the findings of fact?
First, the statute says they can't do it. So all the rules that are going on now are just as they call. They're making up the rules as we go. You can try to Moran, but it's a recommendation. But in their argument, in their brief, they say, well, you got your board hearing. Your board hearing was Moran. If my board hearing was Moran, I won. Case is over with. You go back when the board gets the information, it's hearsay. It's not based on competent evidence. The board's review of this was hearsay. It was all of the record of the trial. It wasn't based on competent and substantial evidence, judging credibility. We weren't called back before. And to show
isn't
recently...
Isn't that how, I mean, in, say, workers' comp, the ALJ hears the evidence, and then it goes up to the board, and they look at it. They don't rehear the evidence. They look at the record and make a decision, and they can change the determinations.
I understand that. But in this,
how is this different?
It's different because we don't have a chance to be heard. We don't have a chance to be before them. And recently, they've made a tacit admission to this, that the two police officers that just were fired in Kansas City had judge trials. The judge found their favor. The board then brought them before them to have a hearing because they knew they were in violation of the statute.
Why did you select a judge trial if you really wanted a trial before the board?
You want to know the truth?
Well,
yeah. The truth is, the police department, the police officers, I represented numbers of them, they think the board is the chief. They don't think they get a fair hearing. And they think if you have a circuit judge who's totally independent, the decision that person makes, that they can believe in.
Why isn't that an issue for the legislature if they feel like this is not an appropriate forum for them to get a hearing as opposed to making that choice and then saying you shouldn't be held to it?
I think the police board needs to go back to the legislature like the St. Louis board did to get this done. The statute's clear. They cannot interpret beyond that statute.
What do you cite to say it's not waivable, though? I mean, I understand what the procedure says, but you chose to take a different route. It's not clear to me why you get to then say, oh, but since that didn't help me, then I want a second chance before the board.
I just think that there's no law. I don't have any law to cite to you. Again, it's the rules as they go. They've made the rules up.
What other areas do we let the parties decide who has jurisdiction?
Pardon me, sir?
I mean, we're basically, where St. Louis has a statute, it's clear.
Yes, sir.
That there's jurisdiction in a hearing officer. And here, this issue of waiver or non-waiver, what other areas do we allow the litigants to decide who has jurisdiction to decide their cases?
I mean, I just think you have to go back to the statute. The statute right. says what it says. It's clear. But if you're over there and they're giving you the choice, anybody, I think, with common sense and good lawyering is going to take the choice.
Thank you, counsel.
Can I ask a question?
One more question. I'm sorry. Sir,
what was the exact agreement, the waiver agreement? Was it written down?
Yeah, there was a written waiver that we would try the case in front of Judge Moran instead of appearing in front of the board.
Did it say anything about subsequently the board would then review that record or not?
Judge, I'll look, and when I come back up, I'll have
okay.
it for you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Quirk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
May it please the court, William Quirk on behalf of the board. Police commissioners, I'm going to focus on the hearing officer procedure because I think that's basically why we're here today. I think there's a little confusion between the St. Louis procedure and the Kansas City procedure. The statute pertaining to Kansas City clearly speaks of a right to appear before the board. It's just a right. It's not a jurisdictional statute in any way with respect to the hearing. Because it's a right, it can be waived by the police officer.
Now, if we were to decide that there couldn't be this alternative hearing procedure, and would you say that waiver is still good? That they could not then still get a, if we were remanded, that they could not still get a hearing before the board?
I think it probably depends, Your Honor, on whether you determine it's a jurisdictional matter or a ultra-virus matter. Your Bodenhausen decision, to me, suggests that it is voidable rather than void ab initio, because there were two procedures in your Bodenhausen case, which we discuss at length in the brief. It was the same error in both of them, and because the party had not raised the earlier error, this court didn't find a problem with it, said it was voidable rather than void. It hadn't been raised. Here, it's absolutely clear that it hasn't been raised. The issue has not been raised.
Could the officer waive the right to a hearing entirely and just have no hearing and just leave it to the board?
I think so, yes.
Are there cases addressing that or anything in the statute that, what's the operative language? You said it's a right, but not a requirement.
The operative language is that the officer shall have a right to appear before the board and confront
hearings.
Witnesses against him. It separately says that the board, after hearing, shall take a vote.
But it says the right to appear before the board at a public hearing.
Yes.
And so apparently it was the board's position that really probably they have a number of these cases that it would be probably expeditious for them to have a hearing officer actually take the testimony and so forth. Was that what the thinking was?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. These are volunteer. They're paid $2,400 a year. They're businessmen. They're lay people. It's a difficult thing for them.
They're called colonel law.
I'm sorry?
Aren't they called colonel law? They get that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But let me take you back to Judge Price's question.
Yes.
What exactly did the agreement that the officer signed provide?
Well,
I see that you're
the agreement is set out at 144 of the legal file, and it just says the undersigned understands that if a hearing officer is requested, the following rights are waived: the right to a hearing before a quorum of the board, and the right to have the testimony and evidence considered by a quorum of the board at the time it is introduced. If anything's clear from this statute, if there's anything jurisdictional here, it's that the board has the ultimate decision-making authority.
Yeah, is there any language, specific language in there as to who makes the ultimate decision?
Yes.
Or what the board, what rights the board has relative to the hearing officer's decision?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. Okay.
I haven't looked at the legal file, so if you can tell me.
It says the undersigned understands that the members of the board will make a decision based on the evidence presented, and that issues of credibility of witnesses will be part of the decision of the board. So that's part of the waiver that was signed. And the statute itself makes it, I think, crystal clear that the board is the ultimate decision maker here, because it says the board shall decide.
The board reserved to itself, in your reading of that agreement, the prerogative of making findings of credibility and so forth, based upon what it reads in the record that was developed before the hearing officer.
Yes, that's correct.
So does the board make it a de novo review of the hearing officer's decision?
To me, it is a de novo review. The court reviewing this is looking at the whole record, and that would include the hearing officer's determination. And you know, reviewing courts can look and say, well, the hearing officer obviously had a better view of credibility, perhaps, and that's something to weigh. But what we ultimately get back to here is the standard of review, and if this decision can go either way, the decision of the board needs to be affirmed.
It seems so atypical for a board to make credibility determinations on witnesses that they never saw.
Right, but this comes up in administrative law generally. As Judge Breckenridge mentioned, I think workers' compensation, perhaps, or just an administrative law judge. This court has an opinion from 1952. I'm sorry to cite such an old case, but it deals with this exact question, where there's a credibility determination in front of an administrative law judge. Then it goes to the commission, or it goes to the agency, which has the ultimate authority to make the decision. The agency reverses the findings of the judge, who had the witnesses and the credibility determination before them. And the upshot of that is that, you know, in reviewing it, you look at the entire record and you weigh the fact that the judge actually hearing the evidence made a credibility determination, but you also look at the record as a whole. You look at the other part of the record as well. Here we have a videotape which supports the decision of the board.
And it isn't really a de novo hearing, is it, when in fact the role of the hearing officer is just to make a recommendation?
It's de novo in the sense that the board, I think, has full authority to reach the decision that it thinks is correct. It's not de novo in the sense that we start over.
What does happen before the board? The statute says that the charges shall be filed and you'll get notice before the complaint or charges are to be heard by the board. So did the board hear something? What was presented to the board?
The board heard the charges in the sense that it reviewed the record. As its decision shows, I think it's legal file 178, it reviewed the entire record presented to the to Judge Moran. It reviewed the videotape and it made its own determination, as was set out in the waiver signed by the officer.
In my vague memory of these types of cases, is there at least are some types of cases where the police chief is the actual final decision maker. Is that right?
I think if it involves 15 days or less discipline, I think it doesn't go to the board and the police chief.
And again, and under those circumstances, the police chief doesn't have anyone come in and hear witnesses. The police chief, who's the ultimate decider, again, is simply looking at the written record.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. The police chief has the ultimate authority to make the decision, and it's essentially not reviewable by anyone.
And is that type of procedure by statute or by?
Well, I think it's a combination of the statute and the internal police procedures. But the statute essentially says that if the discipline is for less than 15 days or less, I believe it says, then it's a determination that can be made by the chief. It doesn't have to go to the board. But again, if there's anything clear here, it's that the board is the ultimate decision maker. Here, the yes, Your Honor.
Officers are have discipline that the board is that have a right to a hearing, say on a yearly basis. Do you have anything in the record?
I asked that question of the department, and I was told that in 1 year they had 12 officers, but as a general rule, you'll see about 5 officers a year that require some sort of hearing that the board would hear or the.
And how long did the hearing in this particular case take?
This hearing, the transcript is in the record. I don't know the precise amount of time, but I would say, you know, probably several hours. It also incorporated a number of depositions that were taken. The total time taken in putting together the written record was probably days. But the actual hearing in front of Judge Moran, you know, based on the size of the transcript, I would say 3 hours. It might be a little bit more, a little bit less. I think it's important to understand the difference between the St. Louis procedure and the Kansas City procedure before we go any further here, because there seemed to be some confusion when Mr. O'Connor was talking. The Rogers case, which is the Kansas City side, the McGull case, which is the St. Louis side, both were dealing with situations where the boards tried to force the officer to go before a hearing officer. Mr. O'Connor related the circumstances of the Rogers case. Here, that's not what occurred. In the McGull case, the court said you can't force them to go before a hearing officer. And by the way, your statute in St. Louis says you have exclusive jurisdiction to conduct this hearing. So there's no way that you can designate a hearing officer. Subsequent to that, the statute was amended, and the Missouri legislature now gives St. Louis the power on its own to designate a hearing officer if it wants to. Again, Kansas City's not trying to do that. All they're trying to do is give the option to the officer. If the officer wants a hearing officer, he can ask for it.
Are you saying that the St. Louis statute was written differently initially?
Yes.
And basically affirmatively prevented use of a hearing officer, and so that's why this supplement had to be added?
I think it affirmative. No, I'm not saying it affirmatively.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily saying that. I am saying the language is different, and there's a stronger argument there because it says exclusive jurisdiction, that it was a jurisdictional matter that the board had to do the hearing.
But you're saying the amendment to the statute permits the board on its own to decide that the hearing is before a hearing officer rather than requiring them.
Yeah, even if not requested, they can force the hearing. Okay. And that's a critical distinction here, because in Kansas City, again, we're not trying to force the hearing. We're giving the officers the option, and as you heard, they want the option because they'd rather go before a hearing officer, even though they understand, or they should understand from the waiver, that the board is ultimately making the decision.
Is there anything to show there's a difference in results with people? I mean, is this why go through? Is this simply a show hearing before the judges?
I think there are a couple of answers to that. First, I think if I were on Mr. O'Connor's side, I'd like to get as many bites of the apple as I could. Try to put a wedge in between the board and the hearing officer. I also think, you know, as a practical matter, a retired Jackson County judge is going to be looking perhaps at different issues than the board. The judge is going to be looking at it solely as a procedural matter, looking at it from the officer's perspective. The board is going to be looking at it from the officer's perspective, but it also has an important duty to the community as a whole. The board has to satisfy the citizens that it has professional police officers, officers who don't do what Officer Coffer did here on this videotape, which is repeatedly beat an unresisting arrestee and then spit on him. I think it's really a little bit different determination that the board has to make.
And just because the board rejected the hearing officer's decision in this case doesn't mean that happens all the time, does it?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with the precise outcome, how many times this has happened. I do think, in fairness, there's a tendency for retired Jackson County judges who are hearing this case to side with police officers when there are difficult circumstances. I also think there's a tendency for the board to look at the community as a whole and try to ensure that we have the best possible police officers doing their job.
Well, that's the purpose of an independent judiciary. I mean, the chief of police has a lot of contact with the board every time there's a hearing. That's the purpose. The board hires the police chief. The police chief has a lot of contact with the board on a regular basis, whereas these judges won't have that contact.
Right, Your Honor, and I think that's why the police officers want the determination, but the ultimate determination is left to the board by the Missouri legislature, and these commissioners are appointed by the governor, and they're given the authority to make the decision.
And it says... I was going to say, and actually, the independent judiciary that reviews the decision is the circuit court and then the appellate courts.
Yes, not the retired judges. Absolutely.
But it says removed for cause. Does anything in the statute spell out what is cause, what is sufficient cause, what kinds of factors the board should look at in determining whether there's been shown, cause has been shown?
I don't believe the statute specifies, Your Honor. We do have the procedures here which were set out in the record, which the board thought were violated by Officer Coffer's conduct. Again, I think, you know, even in a situation, in fairness here, if you can say this decision could have gone either way, under the standard of review in Hampton and LaGood, this court's recent decisions, this court, the reviewing court, needs to side with the board's decision here because, really, as a practical matter, the test is whether the board's decision is against the overwhelming weight of the evidence under LaGood. And here, it clearly isn't. I mean, you can look at the videotape, and a reasonable person can interpret that videotape as Officer Coffer's having used excessive force in hitting a suspect that was not resisting, and then in spitting on him.
But then your hearing officer saw the same stuff. I mean, he saw the videotape, he saw the evidence, he heard the testimony. He came to a different conclusion.
Yes, he did, Your Honor. What I'm saying is, in a case like this, and I'm willing to concede that this is a case where you could go either way. I'm saying a reviewing court, in a case where you can go either way, needs to affirm the decision of the board. Because you can't say, and footnote 5 in the LaGood decision makes that precise point. It says if it can go either way, we need to side with the agency. That concludes my time. If there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'm going to feel like a FedEx man, but I'm going to try. Up to the judge, your question as it relates to these hearing officers, how many cases they try a year. When they move to terminate someone, that's a police officer whose career and life is at stake. When they leave their house that day, every day to go to work, they don't know if they're coming home. And there's got to be a process that's in place that if they lose their jobs, that these guys that are appointed can come down and sit and listen to their case. And they don't have 5 or 6 cases a year. They may have 1 or 2. I've represented 20 of them. 17 of them were dead wrong and dead guilty of what they did, and they don't ask for hearings. These hearings are few and far between. And when you read this thing that we signed off on, you tell me what that says. Does that say that I get that they're going to judge the credibility of the witnesses? Judge Russell said, yeah, how do you do that from a transcript? You can't. You can't. You got to see them. Moran saw them. Moran made the decision.
Mr. Tanner, if you can waive a hearing entirely, why can't you waive the right to a hearing from the board and decide someone else will hear it instead?
Let's assume for the argument, Judge, that that's right. Because in all sincerity with you, I want the decision that stood. I don't really care about my waiver. It's a legal argument that I'm making. To be honest with you, I don't really care about it. Because I had my hearing. That witnesses were seen, that witnesses were judged, and a decision was made by a board who listened and made their decision on incompetent evidence, on hearsay. This is not a do-over. The last thing I want is a do-over. I'd rather you find against me. This is 5 years this guy's been without pay. I don't want to go back to that
board. So on the merits, you're saying the record does not support the decision?
Yes.
Okay, tell me why.
Judge Clark found
that.
Look at Judge Clark's decision. He went through every aspect of the testimony. This whole case, they keep talking about the videotape. My God, it's in the record. Please recess down. I'll give up my time. Go watch it. Because this is important, Judge. I've only got a couple minutes. I don't mean to interrupt. But the bottom line is this. In Easley's deposition, who was the chief of the time, said that this guy was being terminated because he spit on this guy. And so the board made their finding and their conclusions of law on the spitting, one, the charges they decided, and two was Easley's testimony. Easley's testimony, his deposition was, question from me on the spitting, he said it appeared that he spit on him. If you watch the tape, he clearly does not spit on him. And that's the joke of the whole thing. Is that no one's ever watched the tape. They've seen the tape. They've never watched the tape. And what happened was five commanders recommended 15 days off for 6 months. Then the tape came on channel TV5. And then 2 months later, the chief terminated. And no one ever watched the tape. They just saw the tape. And if I played that tape right now for you and you saw it, you'd say he spit on it. But if you watch it, you see that he doesn't. And we're really here for because Moran saw the tape, he watched the tape, and the guy never spit on him and never used excessive force. And that's the rub of the whole deal. That's why I don't want to go back. We had our hearing. We won. Kofor should be reinstated.
Does the board have the ability to take more evidence after the hearing? I mean, once the hearing's there, is the record closed? They can't use the videotape if it's already been in the record and Moran decided on it.
The only thing I can tell Your Honor is, recently, they took more evidence on the two officers that were taken off, and the reason I believe they did that, this decision is looming. And they didn't know which way to go with this, and they felt that they better at least have them before the board. I'm not, the people on that board are good people and honest people. They just made a mistake in this case, and no one's willing to stand up for it. And you cannot make a decision against Kofor on a board who listened and made their decision on incompetent hearsay testimony.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case is submitted.